Testing in the House Chamber, 155th Legislative Day.
The House will come to order. Members will take their seats. Visitors will retire from the chamber. The Sergeant-at-Arms will close the doors. Members and guests are asked to please silence all electronic devices. This afternoon's prayer will be offered by Representative Speciale. We ask our members and our guests in the gallery to please stand for the prayer and to remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance, which will be following the prayer. Representative Speciale.
Please pray with me. Almighty God, we thank you for bringing us safely here today to represent the people of North Carolina. We pray that you will be with us as we deliberate, debate, and decide on today's legislation. We pray that our deliberation will be swift and precise, that our debate will be courteous and relevant, and that our decisions will be in the best interest of the people of North Carolina, and that all that we do will be in accordance with your will, and we pray this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, is recognized.
Mr. Speaker, the journal for November 13th has been examined and found to be correct. I move that it be approved as written.
Representative Lewis moves the journal for November 13th to be approved as written. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The journal is approved as written. Petitions, memorials, or papers addressed to the General Assembly of the House. The clerk will read.
Sampson County Board of Education. Resolution of the Sampson County Board of Education regarding the need for additional capital funding for infrastructure.
Petition is placed on file in the clerk's office. Mr. Clerk, Chair is going to direct that all messages to the Senate and the Governor today be sent by special message. Also, the Chair is going to suspend Rule 12D so that the members had to work through lunch, so members will be able to eat on the House floor. Representative Lewis recognized, Representatives Lewis and Hall recognized Senate Fourth Committee report. Clerk will read.
Representative Lewis and Hall, Redistricting Committee report. House Bill 1029, Congress 2020, favorable committee substitute, unfavorable original bill.
Unfavorable counter, committee substitute counter for today. Introductions of bills and resolutions. Clerk will read.
Representative Lewis, House Joint Resolution 1026, adjournment resolution.
Counter, without objection, today's counter. So ordered.
Representatives former Butterfield, Harrison, Reeves, and Jackson, House Bill 1031, the bill to be entitled Clark 8.
Bill is referred to the Committee on Redistricting. Representative Jones of Columbus is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to recognize a very talented group of young ladies who have excelled in working together as a team. These ladies are from Columbus County and represent Williams Township Lady Aggies Volleyball. They won their conference and postseason tournament and went undefeated for the entire season. A special thank you to coaches Heather Williams and Lynn Hewitt for their time and dedication to these ladies. To the entire team, you have represented your school and Columbus County with great integrity, and we are incredibly proud of all that you have accomplished. Members, we have the pleasure, I think Mr. Speaker is going to acknowledge them now.
On motion of the gentleman from Columbus, Representative Jones, the chair is happy to extend the courtesies of the gallery to the Williams Township School Lady Aggies volleyball team on an undefeated season. With them today are their coaches Heather Williams and Lynn Hewitt. Angela Jones, the wife of Representative Brenda Jones, is also in attendance today. Would y'all please stand so we could welcome you and congratulate you. Thanks for being with us. calendar, House Bill 200, the clerk will read.
Representatives Hurley, Linda Johnson, Horn, and Elmore, House Bill 200, a bill to be entitled 2019 Storm Recovery, Various Budget Corrections, General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
The gentleman from Henderson, Representative McGrady, is recognized for a motion.
My motion is to approve the conference report.
The gentleman has moved the adoption of the conference report to House Bill 200. The gentleman has the floor to debate the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, what is before you is a disaster relief bill. I've sent you two different documents. The first was a document prepared by staff that lists out all the money matters that are in the disaster relief bill. And just a little while ago, the bill as it comes to you is both a disaster relief bill and a budget technical corrections bill. And I asked staff to prepare a summary of the budget technical corrections piece, so that should be before you. Mr. Speaker, if possible, I can have staff on the floor if
gentlemen's
necessary.
Staff's allowed.
Let me first deal with the primary substance of the bill, and that's the disaster relief piece. Essentially, all the federal matches that were requested by the administration and Corps are in this bill. The House number for the Dorian federal match is in the bill, and the difference there was that we are, as you may be aware, the feds did not approve funding requests for individual assistance, but in our bill that we passed last week unanimously, we put money in to cover those losses, the feeling that if it's a loss, the constituent in Bobby Hanick's district doesn't frankly really care whether these are federal monies or state monies. They just like to have be treated the same way as other disaster relief victims, and so we have included that extra money. The CERTIF fund, which is the fund that is used to for the state to respond to every disaster out there of whatever site, is being topped off again in this bill, and that's really important. And in the chart I provided you, you can see everything that has been included. All the various Dorian-specific funding, for example, Elizabeth State, Ocracoke School, and the Lake Matamuskete watershed have all been included. And so then what I want to add is, well, what else got put in? And there were, in the Senate bill, there was the rural health care stabilization fund, something that we passed that bill, but we didn't fund it, and we were playing ping pong with respect to how to fund it and what bill. This is in this bill. It was in the Senate bill, and while it's not disaster relief related, it is something that we have previously taken up. There is a provision related to Outdoor Heritage Advisory Council grants. This was a request to get the grant program running. It's roughly, it's $500,000. Some people were concerned that, that we were going to get into salary issues related to the Outdoor Heritage Council, but, there is nothing like that in this bill. Added to the bill also was $1.5 million for the Viper service contract. The Viper is it's a communication system used by State Highway Patrol and others. The system needs to be maintained. We worked out an agreement to fund the service agreements, and because of the budget, this wasn't funded. To my knowledge, no one has any problem with this issue, recognizes that it needs to be funded. Then the obvious question is, well, what didn't get funded? And there are four or five categories of what didn't get funded. Broadly, coastal resilience monies for DEQ at 1.3, some boating access repairs. The big one is LIDAR mapping, a $32 million. The swine buyout is not in this, and some money for local government planning assistance. Now, the Senate was very concerned about just what the total spend number was going to be here. They surprisingly did not have any objection to any of these funding requests, funding that we had put in our bill, which totaled just under $50 million. They have indicated these are appropriate things to be funded and have indicated that they would like to take them up in another bill that we might take up in January. So basically the bill in terms of money is our bill with the exception of these four things plus the things that were added back, the hospital piece, outdoor heritage, and then the Viper. So that's where we are on the money side. On the provision side, all of the House provisions are in this bill, with one exception, and that related to abandoned vessels. And that's just a thorny issue. It's really hard to deal with on the fly, and that was the only provision that was in 1023 that isn't in this bill. The additional piece that was added to the bill are the budget technical corrects. And I sent you a summary of the budget technical corrects. I will tell you in my place, and we quizzed staff on this, that all of these technical corrects came from staff or they came from OSBM. We have been passing many budgets, as you may have noticed, and we had a base budget. And because of the way we are processed and the changes that have occurred while we're doing the budget process, we have created a number of technical issues. You'll see some of them are just numbers got put out of place. But that sheet will give you everything. Another question I put to staff when this came up, I said, what is it in this bill that Governor Cooper might have an objection to? Are we trying anything else? And the only one that was pointed out to me by staff is Section 5.7. This relates to funds that might come in from other sources. And this is a budget provision in the current budget that would have the funding go through our treasury and not be put somewhere else. I note that the governor today has indicated his problem with this provision in rather terse terms. All I can say to you is, in my place, if any of these technical provisions, frankly, had come from any legislator, they probably wouldn't have been in the bill. I got to rely on my fiscal staff to put forward the provisions and corrections that they know need to be there, and that's how all of this came about. So this isn't, the Senate pulling a quick one or somebody on this side pulling a quick one here. These are just provisions that staff came back to me and said we need to put in. Throughout this time, I've tried to communicate with every member that had a question about what's in the bill and what's not in the bill. I've had discussions with the governor's office. While I understand what I'll characterize as a quibble with respect to this provision, I understand from the governor's office that, they support this bill. They just don't like that it's carrying this one technical correction. I would note that some of the other technical corrections are corrections that the administration sought. So I would ask you to vote positively on the conference report. It largely reflects the work that resulted in a unanimous vote on the floor a week or so ago. I pledge to you to try to get those last four or five things that we had in the budget, in our bill last time, into the next disaster relief bill that I source. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
What purpose does the lady from Guilford, Representative Harrison, rise?
To ask the conference report manager a question, several questions.
I yield.
Representative Henderson, Representative McGrady from Henderson, do you yield to a series of questions?
I yield.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and thank you, Representative McGrady, for all of your hard work on this. I know y'all put a lot of time into this. I just had a couple of clarifying questions. You said that, I believe you said that there's no coastal resiliency funding in this. You mentioned that the LIDAR money, that the mapping money, and the swine money, that nice bipartisan provision that was in the House bill, local planning money, and the abandoned vessel money. You say you expect that to come up in a future bill?
I do.
In January, all those provisions? Follow up. I appreciate that, and we keep saying that. We've been trying to get more swine money since Floyd, I think. But I appreciate that you understand the importance of that, and thank you for that.
Let me just respond. Senator Jackson indicated he was aware there were more demand for those monies to get swine farms out of flooded areas, and he understands that this needs to be funded. It was just a request that it not be funded now and pick it up in January.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Follow-up? And I wanted to ask about the Outdoor Heritage grant money on page 3. Is that related to hurricane recovery?
No.
Okay.
Additional questions?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The provision in Section 5.7 from the staff. I saw the governor's press release, but I also was just wondering, just in reading it, would that impact an individual's donation to a museum where there's not like a separate 501c3 supporting arm of the museum, but say the cash donation box in the front of the Natural Science Museum across the street. Those sorts of gifts to Carolina or other UNC system schools that are not made to specific private foundations affiliated with the UNC system schools, will those go to the Treasury?
I think I'm going to need to get staff assistance on this one. I think Brian's joining me.
Staff's been permitted on the floor. I thought that was done early on. Okay.
Thank you for the question. It's not clear to staff and thus me as to how that would work. If they had specific provision in other law to bring those monies in, that would allow that money to go that way as opposed to come directly through the appropriation process.
Do you have additional questions?
Just a quick comment.
Yeah, floor.
This is a really important bill, and I appreciate your work on this. I'm going to support it. I hope that we can genuinely get some funding into the coastal resiliency efforts as we continue to face these storms. Thank you.
And I share your views on that. And again, I was somewhat surprised. I usually am used to having severe pushback on things that we propose. In this case, the Senate's position was, we agree these need to be funded. This is not time sensitive, and let's put this with some other things that actually got cut from our bill when we next take this up. So I'm going to hold them there to commitment, Representative Harrison.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Currituck, Representative Hainig, rise?
Speak on the bill.
You have the floor to speak on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. On behalf of the citizens of Ocracoke and Hyde County, I want to thank Representatives Bell, McGrady, the Conference Committee, and Senator Steinberg for working so hard on this relief bill. Ocracoke has a long road to recovery, and this will be an instrumental towards that recovery. I want to thank all the General Assembly for making sound financial decisions that have allowed our rainy day fund to grow and to be used for exactly this purpose. I respectfully ask for a green vote. Thank you very much.
Is the gentleman from Buncombe, Representative Turner, on the floor? His light is on, and I just do not see him on the floor. For what purpose does the gentleman from Columbus, Representative Jones, rise?
Thank you, Madam Speaker, to debate the conference report.
You have the floor to debate the conference report.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Folks, you've heard me over the last several years speak about this. This, again, is a very positive impact to one of the most distressed districts that we have in the state, Columbus and Robinson County, and I think my colleague, Representative Graham, will agree that we need these abilities to borrow these monies, the $10 million, the $5 million, the $15 million, again, the Golden Leaf. These are the ways we've been able to rebuild our communities. From Florence and Matthew, we are still recovering. We still do not have folks in homes. We've got folks still in hotels. We have roads that are still impassable. So I ask for your green vote and your support on this, because this will go a long way in helping rebuild a district that's still striving to become whole again.
For what purpose, gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Autry, arise.
I have a question for the conference report manager, please.
Representative McGrady, do you yield for a question?
I yield.
He yields.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Representative McGrady, on page 2 of the bill, line 36, the Golden Leaf may also provide grants to 501c3s, nonprofit organizations, and established religious organizations to repair or replace places of worship damaged or destroyed by Hurricane Florence. The funds allocated to the Golden Leaf in this subdivision are not subject to GS 143C-6-23D. That statute is the statute that dictates how grantors from these granted funds have to justify the need and how the state will validate and verify those needs and manage the distribution of that money, but also for the reporting purposes. Can you tell me why that these funds are exempt from that reporting?
Gentleman may respond after seeking counsel.
Madam Speaker, you just give me a second. I've got a different staff member who helped me on that piece.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for the question. It was fairly technical, but I do now remember it. Golden Leaf is one of the, it may be the only one in this bill, but in the past, Golden Leaf and other nonprofits, foundations have gotten money to get out as a way of getting the money out. The OSBM reporting process doesn't line up with Golden Leaf's reporting process at all. And so rather than forcing them into the OSBM reporting process, we've exempted them from them. I'll state in my place, and staff can confirm this to you, Golden Leaf has been the best at reporting how it's spending its money, where it's going out, the reports it's generated, than probably any of the governmental agencies subject to the OSBM requirement. So that is, as I understand it, why we exempted them, because they've proven consistently that they will report. I would also add that Golden Leaf, in the beginning, it was rather controversial. We put money towards Golden Leaf. There were members here that weren't very excited about putting money there. But my experience since Hurricane Matthew has been that they have been one of the best ways to get monies out. And Representative Bell and I have found out that over, unfortunately, four different storms now, that a lot of the times the nonprofits that we can get money to are actually the best way of getting money to the people that need it. So that's why the appropriation is there, and I hope I answered your question.
Yes, sir, you did. Thank you very much. Mr. Speaker, may I debate the bill?
Gentleman is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, I support this bill. I think these funds are absolutely needed at this stage of this recovery process for all these storms. But I also just want to remind this body that this is exactly what the climate crisis looks like and will continue to get worse for us until this body actually takes some serious effort in mitigation of the climate crisis that we're living through today. So thank you very much. I will be voting green on this. I encourage everyone else to, but I should hope that we at some point in the future would take some real comprehensive action on the climate crisis. Thank you, sir.
For our purpose, gentleman from Scotland, Representative Pierce, rise.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to comment on the debate that was going on between...
Gentleman has the floor.
Speaker, again, I want to thank you for last year. We did have the opportunity to put, colleagues to put money in for churches, particularly down in the area. It was really rough, and many of those churches have benefited, Mr. Speaker. Many of them have remodeled churches, and there's still some who are still in the process, but that was a good move, and I remember that. I had a chance to talk with the Speaker, and others, a group of us came together, particularly the clergy, Representative Lucas and others. Many of our churches benefited from that brethren that was really going through some difficult times, and they continue to keep moving forward. So thank you, Mr. Speaker, for having the opportunity to do that last cycle. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose, gentlemen from Wake, Representative Jackson, rise.
For motion, Mr. Speaker.
Gentlemen may state his motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move pursuant to Rule 24.1B, subsection B, that this bill be divided and filed such in a written format with the clerk's office.
Representative Jackson, the chair's receipt of the gentleman's motion. Pursuant to Rule 24.1B, the chair is of the opinion that the bill does not that the bill is not subject to division in this instance, that it would not, that by being so divided, is not one that would be, that should be divided. So the chair would deny the gentleman's, motion, would rule it out of order.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to give a notice of appeal and would like to be recognized to speak to that appeal.
Gentleman has appealed the decision of the chair. The gentleman is recognized to speak to the appeal of the decision of the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, so what this division motion would do is it would divide section parts 1 through 4 from 5 and 6. You heard that this bill is, in fact, divisible. You heard Representative McGrady talk about that sections 1 through 4 are disaster relief provisions, and parts 5 and 6 are budget technical corrections. The rule is very clear under this. It says that the Speaker shall determine whether a bill admits to such a division. That's not subjective. I mean, clearly it does admit to such division. I filed the way to do it. The bill sponsor or the bill manager described his thoughts and how these were basically two bills put together. And so all I'm asking for is that the bill be divided, and so that those of us who wish to vote for disaster relief are allowed to do that without voting for provisions that clearly are against that, in my opinion, will cause many, many problems down the road, possibly moot some currently pending litigation that's pending, and I just don't think are appropriate in a technical corrections bill. So I'd ask for your green vote.
And members, the chair will simply refer the body to Rule 24.1, where the chair is to determine if the bill admits of such division. The chair and the chair is of the opinion that it does not admit of such a division, but the gentleman has appealed the decision of the chair. For what purpose, gentleman from Orange, Representative Meyer, rise.
Mr. Chairman, may I make an inquiry of the chair?
Certainly.
Respectfully, Mr. Speaker, you've already spoken to this bill twice, but this is the third time I can remember in recent weeks where we've talked about the application of Rule 24.1B. And I wonder if you can provide us with any general guidance on how we should know as members whether a bill does admit division or not. How can we tell if we want to make this motion? How can we tell whether it qualifies or not before we make the motion?
I'll let you know. The question before the House is, should the member's appeal of the chair's ruling be sustained? All those in favor of the member's appeal will vote aye. All those opposed to the appeal will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 48 having voted in the affirmative, 53 in the negative. The appeal is denied and the decision of the chair stands. Further discussion, further debate on the conference report? If not, the question for the House is the adoption of the conference report to House Bill 200. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 99 having voted in the affirmative and 2 in the negative. The conference report to House Bill 200 is adopted. And the Senate will be so notified. Senate Bill 356, the clerk will read.
Represent Senators Wells and Brown, Senate Bill 356, a bill to be entitled DOT Cash and Accountability, General Assembly of North Carolina Acts.
And for what purpose does the gentleman from Davidson, Representative Jarvis, rise?
I would like to change my vote on the last vote to a yes.
I imagine the gentleman was getting some looks, particularly who was sitting behind him there. The gentleman will be recorded as having voted aye on the conference report, the House Bill 200. Representative Torbett, the gentleman would like to make a motion relative to a conference report about DOT cash and accountability.
I was thinking about that, Mr. Speaker. I will be happy to do that. The motion would be that we concur with Senate Bill 356.
The motion is the gentleman moving that the House adopt the conference report to Senate Bill 356.
That would be correct.
Yes, sir. That's
the gentleman
correct.
Has moved the adoption of the conference report to Senate Bill 356, and the gentleman has the floor to debate the motion.
Apologize. It's been a long morning. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for hearing, I guess, the cries out there. Is that for months we've been talking about relief for Department of Transportation. As you know, that they were met with an onslaught of hurricane funding that came out of their pocket that they were also, mandated by the courts to pay over $400 million worth of MAP Act money in litigation. All in all, that accounted for much more money than they typically budget, than we typically budget in their annual budget. So we were rapidly approaching the floor of their availability. And in case you don't remember, when you actually get to the close to the floor, by general statute, we told them they could not go below it. So that was leading to the very great possibility of layoffs throughout the industry, as well as work stoppages and delays on projects. The number of projects that were expected to be delayed had nothing occurred with 900 projects across the state, virtually impacting every county in the state. The number of layoffs, when I asked, actually couldn't be calculated, but it wasn't a good number, just as a very, very, very rough estimate. So we set about trying to find a solution. A couple months back, the House chairs got together in transportation and formulated an ask that equated to over $600 million, a tremendous amount of money that would actually go in and fix the issues at DOT, not only for short-term but for long-term as well. That budget, that bill rested comfortably in. What we did know is that the Senate was actually looking at that bill and looking at a way to address the shortcoming as well. Yesterday, or I'd say about 24 hours ago, a bill came from the Senate as a conference report, and that's the bill that we're talking about today. What it actually does is in Section 1.1 for fiscal year 2019-2020, it authorizes the issuance and sale of $400 million in North Carolina bonds, which is $100 million more than what we authorized last year, to give them an influx of $100 million additional dollars. And that's, my understanding, is a one-time ask. So instead of the bond for $300 beginning of next year, it'll be an ask for $400, which gives them $100 million additional dollars to address some of the shortfall. It directs the Department to transfer $100 million of that $50 million in February 1, 2020 and $50 million in May 1, 2020 from the Highway Trust Fund to the Highway Fund as a loan. The reason being is because where they need the most amount of cash to replenish the out of pocket expenses for hurricane relief and other storm recovery, the MAPAC fund, it was when one account in the Highway Fund, and that's the General Maintenance Reserve, or called GMR is the acronym. So what this does, it will take that money and transfer it into that account, therefore covering those shortages. It also does something that we've talked back and forth about between the House and the Senate and what to do, but it actually has decided upon to create a transportation emergency reserve, or if you would, a rainy day fund inside transportation, specific to transportation, of up to $125 million in funds to be used in the Department for presidentially declared major disasters. Initial funding in this bill is going to be $64 million from the general fund. Going forward, the department shall fund the reserve by July 30th each fiscal year to maintain the fund at $125 million. Additionally, the department, in coordination with OSBM, shall report biannually on projected minimum fund need for the reserve. We may adjust the department budget for any category or expenditure, except salaries, to pay for unanticipated expenditures from snow and ice removal and emergencies, and shall revise the base budget to increase funds available for snow and ice removal and emergency. What that kind of says in a nutshell is that in the past, the body have only allowed DOT to use the general maintenance reserve to access those funds. Now we're telling them any fund account throughout transportation, just the best allocation and flexibility to be used, so we don't put one tremendous hit on just the GMR account. So we're moving forward on that. It also limits to $150 million the amount of department funds available each fiscal year to pay for MAP Act damages. It clarifies that the interest added to just compensation damages shall be simple interest only. Section 1.5 directs the department to expeditiously seek reimbursement from federal government for qualifying disaster expenditures along with reporting requirement. Evaluating this problem, we were wondering why it was taking so long to get the FEMA stuff back. Well, there's a couple of reasons. One is, let me give you an example. If a road is washed out, DOT's main interest is to get that road open just as quick as humanly possible. It may require, if a bridge is washed out, it may require a temporary fix, a temporary culvert, for example, with gravel and then some brief payment to quickly restore that road. Well, that's not the permanent fix, so FEMA may or may not pay the extent necessary due because they want a permanent fix instead of a temporary fix. But what do we do for the people of North Carolina? Do we wait another year, put in a new bridge, or do we quickly put back the road and then program the new bridge in days and weeks to come when it's more easily acceptable and adaptable? Well, I still bank on the side, if it's an emergency, put the road back up so it provides access for people in North Carolina as needed, and we'll work on fixing it permanently down the road. So there are some issues about funding within FEMA that we need to work out. Plus, we can take a focus on FEMA funding and put some people specifically doing nothing but looking at FEMA to address those paperwork, the filings, if we're hoping to expedite those funds. It removes the requirement to repay general fund loan made to the department pursuant to state law 2019-15. We loaned them $90 million last year in the Senate budget to help get them over a short form. We're gonna say in this bill that it's like the $20 you loaned your daughter to get gas in the car, tell her you pay me back next month. Now we're just gonna say, never mind, you don't have to pay us back. So we're relinquishing that payback. That gives them $90 million that they were banking to put back to some of the shortfall. It requires an audit by the state auditor, requires the department to submit a comprehensive financial management report. There's a tremendous amount of reporting requirements to hopefully provide additional oversight and keep a closer eye on what's going on. All in all, it puts about $290 million worth of the people's hard-earned tax money back to work on their streets, and people that do work on the streets. I'm standing ready for any questions. Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Speaker. Sorry I was a little bit slow of getting to the microphone.
For what purpose, gentleman from Wake, Representative Jackson, rise.
Speak to the conference report.
Gentleman has the floor.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to direct my comments to section 1.4B of the conference report, which is dealing with the interest of a party. So there's a simple change at the end of that paragraph that says an amount awarded as damages shall bear simple, not compounding interest. And this provision is, I'm sure, came at the request of DOT. It's a result of a lawsuit that is currently pending in front of the North Carolina Supreme Court. It's called the Chappelle case. And it has to do with one of the map back cases where somebody's property had been, I don't know if taken is the right word. I don't know what the word is, but we all know about these map app cases about 25 years ago. And so when the court ruled, the rule was that interest was at the legal rate, which until a couple years ago was 8%. It still is 8% for some cases, but there's a provision under the law where you can make an argument. And so DOT argued it should be less than 8% and compounded with simple interest, and I think it was somewhere around 2.5% DOT was arguing that they should be paid. The plaintiffs in that case had an expert come in and say if they had invested in a mixture of 60% equity and 40% bonds, like our state treasurer does, they would have returned somewhere around 8.7% in interest over the course of the 25-year period. And the judge in that matter took a number in between the two and said, I'm going to award you 8%, but I'm going to compound it 8% because that's what would happen if we'd have given you the money 25 years ago. And so here we are today changing that rule. You know, one of the first bills that is filed every year in this General Assembly, the time I've been here, is eminent domain. So I know that is something that a lot of people feel strongly about under what circumstances the government should be able to take your property. However, I'm not so sure that people are as concerned about what happens, how you're treated once the government does take your property. Because we continue to make these changes at the request of DOT, whereas if I sue somebody and get a judgment, I'm going to get 8% on my judgment. But for DOT, we changed the legal rate to be the prime lending rate, which is much lower now. Now we're making another change for DOT because of an active court case. And I'm just not sure that's the way we should treat folks who are not giving up their property voluntarily, right? These are people who have been complaining for 25, 30 years that their property has been seized, they have been able to do nothing with it, and that if somebody had just given them fair compensation 25 years ago, they could have taken that money and invested it in the 90 stock market, which went through the roof and everything, and there's no telling what they would have today. Now, this provision does have an effective date that only makes it apply to cases filed after January 1st of 2020. That has an effect of what it's going to do is there's about 100 of these MAP Act cases, as I understand it, that have not been settled. Those attorneys now have an incentive to all run out and file a lawsuit in the next 6 weeks. So they get the old interest rate. But then they will be treated differently than other constituents who have a problem in the future with DOT. I don't have a problem with the DOT funding. I think it's great what we're doing. I have received hundreds of messages from constituents in the Raleigh-Durham and local area about the need to provide some DOT funding. So I commend the majority for putting together this bill. I just wish this provision wasn't in it, and so I thought it was important to point out to you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Henderson, Representative McGrady, rise?
To speak on the bill.
The gentleman has the floor.
I want to start by thanking Representative Torbett for his work on this. It's a pretty good backstory. He's right. It was 24 hours ago that for the first time we saw a bill. And that first bill had some things in it, like new taxes on hybrids and a range of other things that I will tell you Representative Torbett just said no. And we find ourselves in an awkward situation here in that this is a conference report. We sort of got to live with it. As Representative Jackson points out, I woke up this morning with the similar calls that he apparently got, and my problem was that I was on the conference report. But I was on the conference report because we need to deal with this problem, and this was sort of the only vehicle to deal with it at this point. I am very conflicted by this thing. On the one hand, we had agreed for the first time to allow for the use of general funds related to disaster relief to go to DOT. That's not the way it has been handled up to this point. But I think that's probably pretty good policy, that, you know, you can, the small stuff, DOT can take care of, but when you get a Matthew, you get a Florence, we're putting money in places that we otherwise wouldn't put money, and particularly allowing them to use these monies to match federal funding and whatnot is fine. But the other two pieces are more problematical. First, there's a direct appropriation of $64 million from the general fund to the trust funds, and then we forgive the $90 million loan. So we're sort of reversing what we did just in June, and when you add all that up, 64 and 90, that's 134 from the general fund, and then you add the disaster relief, and you're now up to $170 million. And so I think it's important that people understand that there are some principles here, and these principles, I hope this is not a road we continue to go down. There's not a severability clause in this bill, and that gives me real problem. And the earlier draft of this bill and drafts that we've had of similar bills have had more accountability. And I'm not talking in terms of the reporting provisions. The reporting provisions here are pretty severe, and I'm sure NCDOT doesn't like what's in this bill. But there's not any real clarity that the monies that are coming in from mostly the general fund are actually going to be put to the problem that we've got. And the problem we've got is that NCDOT, for whatever set of reasons last year, rather than putting on a brake, they put their foot on the accelerator, and they've left a lot of building road contractors around the state in a position of they've hired and ramped up to do roads and bridges in the state, and now all of a sudden the money isn't there. This may be the worst bill that I'm going to ever vote for. I think the need is there, and I'm wildly pragmatic, maybe to a fault. I do think we need to solve the problem. I think we are trying to solve the problem. It's only an incremental solution because this doesn't get anywhere near the total amount of money that Representative Torbett and the transportation chairs would like. But it does start down that road. Do I think we're solving it in the right way? No. And I hope it's not the precedent for future raids. It is there's a certain irony here for those of us who have been appropriators. We spent the last 8-9 years, in my cases, trying to reverse transfers out of the transportation fund to the general fund. And lo and behold, I now find myself voting for a bill where we're going to take monies from the general fund and put it in the transportation fund. I will vote for the bill, but I sure hope we figure out a different way of dealing with the next bill and the bill after, whatever it's going to take to try to solve this problem. Thank you.
Representative McGrady, will the gentleman yield to a question from the chair?
I do, with some trepidation.
When the gentleman was an attorney in court, did he argue on behalf of his clients the way he argued on behalf of this bill today? I'm just curious.
I suspect, Mr. Speaker, my hourly rate was higher than yours.
I can guarantee it was. For what purpose does the gentleman from Cabarrus, Representative Pittman, rise?
Inquiry of the chair.
The gentleman's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I knew this is conference report, so we can't do amendments, so I was wondering if there's going to be a way to correct typographical errors as we go forward.
These and other bills, there's a process whereby staff can go through and simply correct those matters that we don't have to deal with.
May I point out one?
If the gentleman would like to.
Okay, on page 2, line 19, towards the end of the line, I'm sure it's supposed to be the Department of Transportation. It says the Department of the Transportation.
Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the gentleman from row end, Representative Warren, rise?
To see if Representative Pittman would yield for a question.
Right. Well, and I guess I would say, Representative Pittman, on that when people I know go to Walmart, they say they're going to the Walmart anyway, so I guess the Department of Transportation will be fine too, but... Well, we'll see. We'll see if they fix it. What Representative Warren had a question for Representative Pittman. Representative Pittman, is the gentleman to yield?
Yes, sir. It is not a split infinitive.
Representative Pittman, do you feel like it would be just as effective if you addressed staff personally rather than seek to embarrass anybody on the floor?
Wasn't doing that. Just finding out whether I could do it later.
Right. For what purpose, the lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Carney, rise.
To speak to the bill.
The lady has the floor. Debate the conference.
The conference report. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I just rise just briefly to remind us of how critical DOT infrastructure is in the state. Critical. And yet we have not stepped up as we should have over all the years I've been here in funding. And Representative Torbett is right. We've got to do better. We have to do better. I just rise to point out one thing of why we're in here today, and that is with our disasters we have been trying to recover from, and DOT and the work that they have done. We have funded them for natural disasters at $66 million historically, roughly each year, each budget cycle. Since 2017, $222 million more has come out of their budget. $222 million when they've been operating in the past for many years at $66 million per budget cycle. That equates out to, in the last 3 years, it has spent more than it has in the last decade. Just keep those numbers in mind as we go forward. How are we going to address this? How are we going to work with funding for these disasters? Because it's not going to go backwards. It's only going to go forward. It's only going to get worse. We've got to step up. So I applaud the effort today to let's step in here, make things right as we go forward, but we're going to be back. Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate. If not, the question for the House is the adoption of the conference report, Senate Bill 356. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 100 having voted in the affirmative and 2 in the negative. The conference report in Senate Bill 356 is adopted. And the Senate will be so notified. For what purpose, gentlemen from Cumberland, Representative Floyd, rise.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to know if Representative Peer would yield for a question that relates to clarity on House Bill 200.
Which member?
Representative Pierce.
Representative Pierce. Representative Pierce, gentlemen yield?
Yes, sir.
He yields?
Representative Pierce, I was taking notes, and as you were commending the speaker on the money for the religious community, and you mentioned that Representative Luca was a minister. Is that correct, or was that incorrect?
I said he was a part of the procedure. Yep.
But not a minister.
Not a minister.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for speaking.
Sir. Members, we have a school group with us today. We have a group of fourth graders from the Peachland Poketon Elementary School in Poketon in Anson County up here on the left. Would y'all please stand so we could welcome you with us today? And your representative is Representative Brody, who is right over there waving to you. He's the representative for Anson County. Glad to have you all with us today. Members, have your attention, please. What we're doing right now, the next order of business we're going to take up is going to be the redistricting bill, which will be House Bill 1029, but there are still amendments being loaded up and there are amendments being drafted. The chair is aware, I think, maybe one or two that are being worked on, so probably the best thing to do, that way everybody can look at all the amendments, is I'm about to put the house at ease here momentarily for probably a half hour to give folks to give time for all of this and give staff an opportunity to do it. This would be an opportune time if there are any notices or announcements members would like to make. We can dispose of some of that now, and then I'll put us at ease. For what purpose, the lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Carney, rise.
For a point of personal privilege.
Lady has the floor. And just a moment, members. Have a member that has the floor. Please give the lady her respect.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate that. This is a very important announcement because I don't know that anybody in here has ever equated their age to compounding or doubling from a previous age that they had. But my seatmate today is trying to outdo Jack Benny. Jack Benny always claimed that he was 39 years old from the first day he turned 39, and he continued to be 39. Today, or rather tomorrow, my seatmate is doubling that on his birthday tomorrow. So join with me in wishing him a happy birthday.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Northampton, Representative Ray, rise.
For a point of personal interest.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Everyone represents, 100 counties around here, and I represent Northampton County, about 20,000 citizens, and last night we had one of our deputy sheriffs that was on the way to a accident, and he ended up having an accident himself, and so I'd like to send the condolences to Deputy McKean Brooks, a 27-year-old Nash County native, and also send condolences to Northampton County Sheriff's Office and all law enforcement. So thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Representative Ray. Any other notices or announcements? If not, We're going to stand at ease. It's about 5 of 3. Why don't we say we're going to stand at ease till 3:20? We're simply going to stand at ease for that period of time. And being at ease, we can handle administrative matters as pursuant to Rule 15.1. Anything else for the House at ease? All right. Chair declares the House standing at ease. Chair would ask any members who have amendments to the redistricting bill that have not submitted those, please get those in as soon as you can. If you have amendments that are being drafted, please notify the principal clerk that those are being drafted at this time so that those can be expected. Thank you. Members, on motion of Representative Jones of Columbus County, the chair is happy to extend the courtesies of the gallery to students from the Columbus Christian Academy from Whiteville. They're here accompanied by their fourth grade teacher, Kenya Powell. Would y'all please stand so we could welcome you and thank you for being with us today. If you're wondering what we're doing, we're on a bit of a recess awaiting some things to be filed. It's a little different than the recess you guys have at school, but that's what we're on, awaiting some documents and things that need to be filed for us to take action on. So once those are ready, we'll be picking back up our pace with getting work done. But hope you all are having a good visit here in Raleigh, and we thank you all for being with us today. All right, the House come back to order. Members, the chair's informed there are still amendments being drafted, but we're going to go ahead and start moving along through this. As amendments come in, we'll deal with them. It appears that we may now be in possession of the final amendment. House Bill 1029, the clerk will read.
Representatives Lewis and Destin Hall, House Bill 1029, a bill to be entitled an act relying on the congressional districts, General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Members, chair is going to go ahead and move on with the amendments first. There's one that may be more. Well, let's just take it up. It's Amendment 1029, ABK 53V, by Representative Goodwin. The gentleman is recognized to send forth an amendment. The clerk will read.
Representative Goodwin moves to amend the bill on page 1, line 8, through page 15, line 30, by rewriting those lines to read.
Representative Goodwin is recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This amendment is to restore the relationships for governance and economic development and everything in the northeast corner of the state. These counties are tier one counties, poor counties, and they rely on each other for that assistance. It doesn't make any changes that are dramatic. It just restores Choan County and Pequimans County into the original district it was in and keeps everything else in there the same. It's just those two counties. Then it makes a correction in Pitt County to equalize that population. Between those two counties is about 24,000 people. So that correction is made out of Pitt County. I ask you to support that amendment.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, rise?
To debate the amendment. The
gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker and members, I would ask you to please support this amendment. I have looked at it. I've worked with the amendment sponsor. And the good news is this actually splits one less VTD than the bill. So this will improve the bill by splitting one less VTD and accomplishing the policy objectives of the amendment sponsor. So I would urge you to please support this amendment.
For what purpose does the lady from Wake, Representative Ball, rise?
To ask the bill sponsor a question.
The bill sponsor or the amendment sponsor?
Amendment sponsor.
Representative Goodwin, does the gentleman yield?
I do.
He yields.
Thank you. Could you please explain? I'm looking at a map for Congress 2020A. Can you explain for me, because I'm a very visual person, exactly what it does to Pitt County, what portions of Pitt County will no longer reside in District 1?
I do not have that map in front of me, and I cannot explain that to you without that map.
Well, could you follow up?
Jim Neal?
Yes.
Could you estimate about how much of Pitt County will be moved?
Well, what the population between Chowan County and Pequimus County is 24,000 people.
Could we get some staff help on? I'd be appreciate if we could get some staff help on that. What the map would look like.
I think I can point out there are related documents on the dashboard. The chair is looking at it, and what the lady may want to do is to look at the House Bill 1029, first edition, then look at the map. It's under the related documents. If you'll see, there's three headings there on your dashboard. Is the bill, then there's the history, then it says related. When you click related, you'll see it says other bill documents, and then there are maps there. And then to go to the amendment, and this probably is helpful for everyone as we take on these amendments. For example, we're on Representative Goodwin's amendment right now. If you just click on the amendment, and then you'll see at the top of your dashboard, it says the HB 1029 Amendment 1. Of course, that's the text of the amendment. Then there's the history. Then it says related. And then when you open up related, you'll see it says map. Click map, and you'll see the two differences. And what Representative Ball, to try to aid the member, what it appears is that those two counties, Little Pequimus and Chowan County, have been added to District 3, and then there was a population taken from Pitt County, but the map, I believe, shows that. For what purpose is the lady from Guilford, Representative Harrison, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I had a similar question related to the Pitt split, and I guess it would be helpful to know, like, is that Greenville, or is that another municipality? Like, what are we talking about in terms of municipality impact? I'm not able to click on it to get like the kind of data we were getting when we were drawing the maps in the redistricting committee. Is it possible to get a little bit more clarity on how Pitt County is impacted, please?
We could have staff. I believe Ms. Churchill is in the back. She may be able to, if you want to confer with her on that, Representative Harrison. Representative Harrison, would the lady mind approaching the dais? For what purpose, gentlemen from Harnett, Representative Lewis Rice?
May I ask Representative Goodwin a question?
Absolutely. Representative Goodwin, does the gentleman yield to Representative Lewis?
Yes, sir.
He yields.
Representative Goodwin, would it help you better answer these questions to know that you equalize population in the county of Pitt by taking the town of Winterville and a little more of the town of Greenville, which was already divided in the map? Would that help you answer this, do you think?
I believe it would. I that means it's divided less. Is Pitt County divided less because of this?
More. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker. May I ask him another question?
Representative Goodwin, gentleman yield to additional question?
Yes, sir.
He yields.
I think what you were, so are you asking me, does that mean more of Pitt County is in District 1? Because if that was the question, the answer would be yes.
Yes.
For what purpose, gentlemen from Craven, Representative Bashali Rice?
Yes, amendment. Sponsor, question.
Representative Goodwin, gentlemen yield?
Yes, sir.
He yields.
So am I to understand that all of Winterville is in the District 3 now or not?
My understanding is not all of Winterville.
Further discussion, further debate on the amendment? If not, the question for the House, the adoption of Amendment A1, sent forward by Representative Goodwin. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Representative Brisson would like to vote. His machine's locked, I believe, Mr. Clerk. Gentlemen may vote. The clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 55 having voted in the affirmative and 40, excuse me, 56 having voted in the affirmative and 45 in the negative. The amendment is adopted. Representative Hawkins is recognized to send forth Amendment ABK 52-V2. The clerk will read.
Representative Hawkins moves to amend the bill on page 1, line 8 through page 15, line 30 by rewriting those lines to read.
The gentleman is recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this amendment is intended to ensure that not only do we have fair districts, but that we are allowing communities of interest to remain whole and to push towards a goal of compactness. And so if members are following, I used the Butterfield, one of Butterfield's maps as my base map, and have allowed in the third congressional for all of Pitt County to be made whole in the district while adding Wayne to the first congressional district. The second congressional district is most of Wake County, with population being made up in part of Wake County in the second congressional district. It changes the fourth to include Person, Caswell, Alamance, and Granville, of course, with Durham County and parts of Wake. It changes in whole the sixth congressional, keeping Guilford whole with parts of Randolph and Chatham and parts of Wake. And with the District 5 keeps Forsyth County whole, but keeps the remainder of 11, 10, and 13 as it was in the Butterfield map. And so I think that this is a good, really good amendment to the maps. As you'll see in District 9, I did keep Cumberland whole and had the opportunity to keep Scotland, Lee, and those others in area. Lots of those places have areas of interest, as well as the Sand Hills area. And some of the other maps, they were stretched into two congressional districts, and so I combined them into one. And so we do have a few split counties, but of course you can't get away from that in a map in a state as large as North Carolina. But I did do my best to allow regions in the state in areas that depend on economies of scale, areas that have similar interests to remain together, and I'll stand for any questions.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, rise?
To debate the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker and members, I'm going to ask you to defeat this amendment. I have a few concerns with it. One, and please understand, I understand how hard it is to draw maps. You've got to get the population equal. So when I point these things out, it's not meant as a criticism of the one who drew this amendment, but some things for you to consider. This amendment divides Wake County four ways. So four different congressional seats would be coming in and out of Wake County. It also divides Guilford and Forsyth counties, which we were told that those communities work well together, which is one of the things we tried to do in the main map, is to try to keep Guilford and as much as Forsyth as we could together. Also, of lesser importance but worth noting, this map has an inconsistent way it treats the pairing of incumbents. There are incumbents that are in the same seat, and to the best of my knowledge, bottom line, I'm also concerned that we've split into some of the smaller counties and taken certain segments of the population out from there. So with that, with all due respect, I would ask you to defeat the amendment.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Durham, Representative Hawkins, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To respond, if I could, to my esteemed colleague from Harnett County.
The gentleman is recognized to debate the amendment a second time.
Thank you, sir. What I was, of course, moving to do is not interrupt smaller counties, but as the gentleman could recognize, it's really hard to make population. With Wake County, the reason that we decided to move with part of the 6th into that part of Wake County is if you're across the Chatham County line, those areas, Apex, et cetera, Holly Springs, have something in common with Chatham. And of course, I represent Durham County, and I know across the border, those are areas that people in my district, they go through pretty frequently. Of course, the airport is on the other side, so that's the extension of RTP, so there is connection there. To the point of considering incumbency, that was not something that I considered, and that's not something that we were mandated to consider. And so I did not, and neither did I think about or have to consider partisanship. The only thing was just a fair map for the people of North Carolina to ensure that areas of interest, those cities that share economies, transportation needs, things in common, schools, universities, those are the only things that were taken into consideration. So I'd respectfully ask for your green vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question before the House is the adoption of Amendment A2 set forward by Representative Hawkins. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 33 having voted in the affirmative and 66 in the negative, the amendment fails. Representative Floyd is recognized to send forth amendment AST 89, version 2. The clerk will read.
Representative Floyd moves to amend the bill on page 1, line 8 through page 15, line 30 by rewriting those lines to read.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not one that like to continue to repeat himself, but this amendment I prepared and presented in redistricting, but because of my colleagues and some of my constituents back home, they asked me to resubmit the amendment. The map. The map itself is a very compact. If you look at the map itself, as it relates to eastern North Carolina, the southern part of North Carolina is compact. If we go up to the Virginia borderline in the yellow, in the blue, it's very compact. If we look at Wake County, instead of being split four ways, it's only split two ways. It keep Guilford County whole. And if we go down to Mecklenburg County, it splits Mecklenburg County, and in the western part of the county, it keeps that whole, and also the right at the tip of North Carolina, close by Tennessee borderline. For those who do not see the map, understand the map, it also keep those community whole. So it's a very compact maps, and I only have four that less than one. So I ask for your support on this map, and I stand to answer any questions.
For what purpose, gentleman from Rowan, Representative Warren Rice?
To ask the representative a question.
Representative Floyd, does the gentleman yield?
Yes, sir.
He yields.
Representative Floyd, is this the exact same map we voted on in the redistricting committee?
The only thing it changed, sir, yes, the only thing it changed was the time.
All right. Do you recall what the vote was?
Let me ask you an additional question. Gentleman yield? He yield? Yield? He yields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Do you recall the vote?
I have a little amnesia. Perhaps you can help.
Follow up?
Gentleman yield to additional question.
Would you like me to remind you?
Like I said, if you can give me any assistance, sir, at my age, I appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Further discussion, further debate. For what purpose, gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, rise.
Debate the amendment.
Gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker and members, I was thinking about Representative McGrady's debate earlier today. So I'll begin this by saying that this is the best amendment I want to ask you to vote against today. Representative Floyd has done a remarkable job at building a map that follows the criteria that we have established in drawing maps. The one thing that I would point out, one of those criteria, though, was to try not to double bunk incumbents. This map doesn't meet that particular criteria, but I do want to say that Representative Floyd has done a tremendous amount of work on this. He certainly has put a great deal of time and thought into this. At this time, though, I don't think what is gained in compactness or any other factor is enough to offset the main proposal. So I would ask you to vote down this amendment.
For what purpose, gentlemen from Cumberland, Representative Floyd, rise.
The speaker, second time, Mr.
Gentleman has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, I did speak with Representative Lewis, and he did, I want to say up front that he did mention that if it's possible that the two of us can work on how could we improve this map. So I don't want that to go unnoticed. But again, Representative Lewis, I was doing this because of my caucus and then my constituents. I know what the vote was in the committee this morning, and I was being sort of facetious with my colleague. He knew that I knew what the vote was because I asked perfectly what was the count, and I was surprised of the count. That's why I asked what was the count. So, thank you.
Further discussion, further debate on the amendment. If not, the question before the House is the adoption of Amendment A3 sent forward by Representative Floyd. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 31 having voted in the affirmative and 68 in the negative, the amendment fails. Representative Farmer Butterfield is recognized to send forth amendment AST 90. Clerk will read.
Representative Farmer Butterfield moves to amend the bill on page 1, line 8 through page 15, lines 30 by rewriting the lines to read.
Lady has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to first thank you for allowing me to serve on the Joint Select Redistricting Committee. I also want to thank the staff for their hard work and commend them for what they've done for the committee. And finally, I want to thank Representative David Lewis, Torbett, and Senator Heiss as chairs of the committee, and the fact that they allowed us to have a process whereby staff were able to be accessible to us during and before and after meetings to draw district maps. that was invaluable. It's a lot of hard work that goes into it, and should be available, in my opinion, to all members, as well as possibly the public, so that people will recognize the kind of work involved and the challenges that's faced when you're drawing maps like this. My first amendment is related to House Bill 1030, which is a bill that I introduced, and the amendment does the following. It splits fewer counties than the current one that's before us being promoted by the committee. It is compact, more than that. It meets Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. It keeps communities of interest whole and will save taxpayers dollars by stopping redistricting lawsuits. It limits the VTDs being split, and it actually splits fewer counties than the one proposed by my good friend, Representative Lewis, and his colleagues. It is, in fact, promoting public confidence and avoids gerrymandering. So I ask you to vote yes, please. Thank you.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, rise?
To debate the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Representative Farmer Butterfield for her work on this very important project as well. I would take a couple of issues with her debate. First of all, it is important to minimize the number of counties that are split. The proposal that I have in this amendment split actually the same number of counties. They both split 12. So there's not a savings there. And I believe, and I'm trying to get this verified by staff, but I believe that there are 20 VTDs split in this amendment and 19 in mine. But if it's not 19, it's 20. I'm trying to get that verified by staff. But when you make a map, it's like any other piece of legislation. They're just policy choices that you have to make. I would point out that there are some unique things about this map, some things that look really, really good about this map. And what occurs, though, is as you build a map, you put population here, and then you put population here, and then you put population here. And when you take that kind of approach, it's kind of like you're trying to squeeze together a sand castle, if you will. And this one accomplishes that by doing basically a transit that runs starting in Caswell County all the way down through Moore. And we've gotten some significant criticism for things like that in the past. Again, couldn't be helped, because when you build really great-looking districts on one side and really great on the other side of the state, it all kind of squeezes together. So I know why it was done, and I understand how it was done. I just don't believe it's the better public policy choice to make here. Not that it's a bad one. I just don't believe it's the better one. So with that, I would ask you to vote against the amendment.
For what purpose, gentlemen from Chatham, Representative Reeves, rise?
To debate the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor.
Now I would ask, ladies and gentlemen, that we support the amendment. I think if you look at the map, the one thing the map does, it definitely passes the eye test. But more importantly, what we've got to look at, and Representative Farmer Butterfield has touched on this, but I think to really emphasize, the reason we're here is because of a decision of the courts. And if we're here for a decision of the courts, then one of the things we've got to look at, or what are some of the parts that the court took issue with. And I think if you compare this amendment with the primary bill or the map that's being presented to us in 1029, one of the things that immediately stands out would be the configuration of districts 8 and 9. I understand Representative Chairman Lewis's point about district 6, but it seems that we are able to work more compact districts north-south than we really are going from west to east or east to west, whichever way you count it. Specifically, the courts talked about splitting Guilford, splitting up Mecklenburg, things of that sort, and that's been reduced. District 8, as you recognize from the primary map, stretches west to east. So if you're going to make the argument about District 6 going north to south, you make the exact same argument, 8 west to east on District 8. The same problem that you're going to run into with District 9 on the primary map for this bill. In this particular case, I think she did a heck of a job of making these districts compact. We understand that based on the original drawings of the original districts that were run on, it was really going to be a little bit impossible not to be in a situation where you've got an uncomfortable double bunking. I would remind everybody, you don't have to live in a district to run for the district. So with all that being said, I think she did an outstanding job on each of her districts, but especially districts 8 and 9, which were specifically challenged and discussed by the court. And if we're trying to do this so that we're not right back here in 3 or 4 weeks having to do this again, I think this map does a better job than just about anything else that's been presented of accomplishing this goal. So therefore, I would ask you, based on that, to vote in favor of this amendment.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the adoption of Amendment A4, sent forward by Representative Farmer Butterfield. Those in favor of the amendment will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Jackson, gentlemen, wish to vote on the amendment. Clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 42, having voted in the affirmative, 59 of the negative, the amendment fails. Representative Farmer Butterfield is recognized to send forth the other amendment she had, and that is AST 91. The clerk will read.
Representative Farmer Butterfield moves to amend the bill on page 1, line 8, to page 15, line 30, by rewriting the lines to read.
Ladies recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. When I was asked to join the committee in the midst of it being functional, I was reluctant. However, I was pleased that the speaker asked me to, because there were no African-American women, and the woman that was up there was out of the country. So what I'm trying to do here is offer an amendment that would be in keeping with the Voting Rights Act, Section 2. This amendment appears to definitely avoid gerrymandering. It keeps communities of interest intact. The compactness is better than the other map that's being proposed to you. This amendment appears to be more competitive. There are only so many ways you can draw the districts. We do not need the districts to look the same as the ones challenged by the court. My amendment ensures fewer counties are split and make the districts the second most compact. Vote yes for the amendment, please. Splits fewer counties and is more compact. Incumbents do not have to live in a district. Gerrymandering is done in public. It's still gerrymandering. Vote yes.
What purpose, gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis Rice.
Debate the amendment.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And again, I compliment Representative Farmer Butterfield for her work. She really has drawn some very good-looking districts here. I'm concerned with, again, a lot of the districts sort of in the center of the state. They take sort of odd squashed shapes, if you will, for lack of a better way to describe it. I think the division of Watauga County is also extremely odd. That being said, I'm also concerned that we divide Bladen County in this map, and you can't help but divide some counties sometimes, but Bladen, as you know, is a smaller population county. With all that said, every vote we take in here is a policy choice. And I am not criticizing this as a bad map. I just don't believe it is superior to the map that I have offered. And with that, I would ask you to vote no against the amendment.
For what purpose the lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Cunningham, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just see if Representative Lewis would yield to a question, please.
Representative Lewis, gentleman yield?
Yes, sir.
He yields.
Thank you. Representative Lewis, in the new proposed map, do you know how many VTDs are divided in this one? I know the last one you said it was 1, 19, or 20. How many for this particular map?
So, representative, give me just 1 minute. That is... If this is, the top of the map says Clark 8, so I'm going to assume this is Clark 8. I don't want to tell you something wrong, but if that's the case, then there would be, according to what I've got here for Clark 8, ma'am, it looks like there are 25 VTDs that are split.
Thank you, Representative Lewis.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the adoption of Amendment A5 sent forward by Representative Farmer Butterfield. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 41 having voted in the affirmative and 60 in the negative, the amendment fails. We are now back on the bill. That appears to have resolved all of the amendments. Representative Lewis is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for coming here once again to do our once-in-a-decade responsibility to apportion the districts for the United States House of Representatives. The map that you have before you is our best attempt to take the subtle admonishment from the court that we may wish to take some action so that new districts for Congress can be created prior to the opening of filing, which is set to be December the 3rd at noon. Let me address a few points that I think are relevant with congressional redistricting that are different from legislative redistricting. First of all, absent a court order, we're not allowed to change districts for the state house or the state senate except every 10 years. There is no such constitutional prohibition on districts for the U.S. House. That's why I'm standing before you today asking you to vote for this bill and to amend or change or create, is probably the best way to say, create new congressional districts. The map that we have prepared here does take into account many of the complaints that were made in the Harper lawsuit. For example, Cumberland County is whole. That was mentioned in the lawsuit. It was also mentioned in the public comment that we took a couple of days ago. We have changed the shape. Representative Reeves and some more folks during this process have talked about we didn't need to have the same sort of shapes of districts. Well, I can tell you that the ninth used to stretch down into Bladen and Columbus. It doesn't do that now. The 8th comes all the way over to Lee and Harnett, and then takes all of Cumberland. We've tried to take as many good ideas along the way as we can, because just because someone doesn't maybe support all 13 of these districts doesn't mean that they can't like one or two of them. I will tell you, we got a great suggestion yesterday from Representative Reeves that has to do with the 4th and the 1st. And what it was to move Warren and Vance into the 1st because they had more in common with the rural northeastern counties than did Franklin, which is experiencing some pretty strong growth moving in from Wake County. I think that's the kind of stuff, that's the kind of cooperation that we've used in trying to go through this process. Not everybody is going to like this map. There's people that are going to vote for this map that don't necessarily love this map. There are some that are going to vote against this map that maybe don't hate this map. Here's what I can tell you. No partisan data was used in drawing this map. There was no pre-established nor incidental partisan goal made in how these districts were drawn. This is simply trying to respect the criteria that the committee passed of, and most of that was the traditional criteria. You don't want to have what's called point contiguity. That means where a map comes together at just one point. You want to try to respect counties. You want to try to respect VTDs or precincts. I use those words interchangeably. And I think we did a really good job at that. Only 12 counties in this map are split. I believe only 19 VTDs are split with the, once the Goodwin amendment passed, it was 20, and it split one less. So I want to say 19. Now, that's if you look at the thousands of precincts across the state, to have only had to split 19, and that solely for the purpose of balancing population, I think that shows a really good good faith effort on our part. I will tell you that drawing lines for any legislative group, be it city council, state house, Congress, all of those or a combination of trying to get the same number of people into the number of seats that you have to work with. As you know, we have 13 seats. Each one of our seats is exactly, you think I would have this number memorized by now, each one of our seats is exactly 733,499. We have three districts that are one person under that. That's been said to be within the realm of acceptability when you are drawing maps of this nature. I'll say that we took to heart the ideas that came forward from the committee. We have drawn this map in public. We have amended this map in public. We have discussed and debated this map in public. We have taken the public input. I think we had 1,052 online post. We've reviewed those. We listened to the public comment that came in yesterday this is a really good faith effort to make districts that are fair, that are compact. These score excellent as far as the compactness tests go. This map is one that you can vote for and feel proud that you have done a good job in providing legislative districts for the U.S. House. And almost as important, it is one in which will allow the filing to open on time and for the people to go to vote during the March primary and choose the candidate of their choice to represent their party in the fall election. That is so important because if we don't do that and there winds up being a special election for U.S. House or anything else, the turnout is just so dismal. I mean, we're already doing primaries in which only about 20% of the voters vote. That goes up a little bit during the presidential years. But you can be sure that if we are forced to have a special primary, the participation level historically is in the single digits. That's how many folks actually show up to vote in the special primary. So we have a compelling public purpose in passing this map. Besides creating good, fair, compact districts, also keeping the election on schedule is important. Again, I appreciate all of the work that the members of the committees have done. I appreciate all the work that our staff has done, and I would urge your support of this bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the lady from Guilford, Representative Harrison, rise?
To debate the bill.
Lady has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I did want to start by thanking you and Chair Lewis for the opportunity to serve on the redistricting interim committee, despite my schedule. And I wanted to thank everyone for all the hard work they put into it, especially the staff, because I know they labored for hours and hours. So I did want to I thank you. But ladies and gentlemen in the House, I just wanted to give us a little history lesson about how we got here. We had congressional maps that were drawn, I think, in 2011 that were struck down by the federal courts because of a racial gerrymander. The maps were redrawn in 2016 with a deliberate partisan bias. And the complaint was filed with the three-judge panel. Well, the Supreme Court determined that was not a matter that was up to the federal court. So a complaint was filed in the state courts, and a three-judge panel issued a preliminary injunction because of the likelihood of the plaintiffs to prevail in their challenge to what they perceived to be the extreme partisan gerrymander of the maps that were drawn in 2016. In its order, the court stated that, I'll just read it so I don't get it wrong, but in its order, the court said that it urged the General Assembly to adopt an expeditious process and that would ensure full transparency and allows for bipartisan participation and consensus in creating new maps. And I think that's really important. I'd say there's some challenges both on the transparency piece and on the bipartisan piece, and then I'll talk about the substance. So on the transparency, there was a lot of comments from the public. There were 100, we're actually up to 1,056. I haven't read them all. I've read a lot of them. Many of the comments from the public related to the transparency piece about the lack of the public's ability to interpret what was going on in the maps. There were videos on all the terminals, but a lot of the discussion, the folks that were actually in the meeting room weren't able to actually hear what was going on around those monitors. And there were several comments about one member of the legislature who would take 7 copies of the maps out of the room into some back room, come back to the terminal, make more changes, and do this repeatedly. I saw a number of comments about that, and there were many concerns expressed about that, what was going on, and that certainly was not done in public. I agree that this is a much better process than it ever has been done before, but I also agree that that bar is really low. But I want to thank the chair for the transparency attempts. Bipartisanship, the map is not a product of bipartisanship, and there's one small change that Chair Lewis alluded to relating to keeping Vance and Warren in the District 1 as it has been for the past, I think, since Eva Clayton represented it 30-plus years ago, and we appreciate that change, but I would say the maps are largely not bipartisan. On the substance, the basis of this map is the retired judge's maps that is sometimes referred to as the common cause map. And that is a real problem. The Heist map is inherent. The Newton map, this map before us is based on the Newton map, which is based on the Heist map, which is based on the retired judge's map. The retired judge's map is inherently invalid as a base map due to the fact that it took into account racial data, which is in contravention of our own criteria. It also had extensive partisan analysis available of this map for, I think it's been a year. So we also had one of our criteria was that we were not going to take into account partisan data. So I think that makes the map suspect as well. We had offered alternatives in committee and on the floor today, the Representative Hawkins and Representative Farmer Butterfield's maps, offered alternatives that would have created fairer and more competitive maps that more accurately reflect the electorate of North Carolina. Specifically, it would have addressed some of the problems that were cited in the complaint that led to the preliminary injunction because the judges felt like they were likely to prevail on the merits. So these are gerrymanders that have been recognized in the complaint as problematic, and they're repeated in this map that's before you. And I will just, and it's not meant personally, just an observation, because this makes the maps problematic because they repeat the gerrymanders. Over 90% on the Pitt County as a result of the Representative Goodwin amendment, although I don't have the exact number now, but it's almost 90% identical to the partisan map that was identified in the complaint as a problem. The Cumberland County also is about, I believe it's got a significant overlap with that as well, seems to be packing Democrats into Republican-leaning districts. Also, there's a similar Democratic vote sink in District 4, pairing the Orange County and parts of Wake and Chatham County into one district. And there's another Democratic vote sink in Forsyth, the pair, the Forsyth and the Guilford County maps. And I sort of feel like once when we started with having the goal of protecting incumbency, we were leading ourselves down the path of repeating the problematic gerrymanders that we had before. I think that the public comments overwhelmingly preferred a process that was more independent, that was more with more public input, that had public hearings around the state, and I feel like I recognize that the truncated schedule that we have before us trying to meet the deadline of getting these in place before the December 2nd filing date posed a potential problem for the public hearings around the state, but I do think that there were many people who felt like the 2 hours that were provided yesterday at 10 o'clock on a work day in Raleigh was inadequate to address concerns for people around the state and those who couldn't get off work to come down and speak. But we did hear a number of concerns about the potential impact on the fact that we need fair maps and a better process. And I'm grateful for the fact that the House Redistricting Committee took up the independent redistricting bills and that we might be considering those in January. And I appreciate Representative McGrady and Lewis and Reeves and others who've been fighting that fight. And I hope that we go down that path because I think until then, we're probably going to be dealing with this problem repeatedly. So while I appreciate all the work that's gone into it, I think these maps are problematic and maybe looking at another court striking down and another redraw. So I just would encourage you to vote no. I think there's a better way to do it, and I do appreciate all the work that's gone into it. Thank you.
Members, we did have one additional amendment the chair is going to take at this time. Representative Queens recognized in Fourth Amendment AST 93. The clerk will read.
Representative Queen moves to amend the bill on page 6, lines 5 through 40, by rewriting those lines to read.
The gentleman is recognized to debate the amendment. The chair will point out that the chair did allow the amendment to be run. There was not a map accompanying, but I believe Representative Queen felt like he could describe the changes adequately without it, so the gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and appreciate the opportunity to offer this. When we started our committee hearing this morning, we started with the Newton map, which is online and available to you, and we did a committee sub on that original Newton map. What I am offering in this amendment is to restore the 11th and 5th districts back to the original Newton map. And it involves three counties, which is the full boundary between the 5th and the 11th. Both maps are compact. They split one county. It's just a flip of which county gets split. In the current map, 2020A that we're amending here, it splits Rutherford County and moves Avery into the 11th district. My amendment will move Avery back into the 5th district and split McDowell County and make Rutherford whole. I have been the senator for McDowell County. It is right in the center of these two districts. So it is a natural one if you have to split one of them, and you do, to make this line work. McDowell County will get two representatives. I assure you that is a good position to be in when you're looking for congressional help. And Avery and Rutherford will be kept whole. I have represented Avery County in the Senate. Avery County's natural movement, its natural economic partners, is to the northwest. It's back toward Boone, Avery, in that direction down into the Yadkin Valley. It's not going west over Mount Mitchell and back to Buncombe. That's not their natural connection. So this restores Rutherford whole, puts Avery in its natural connection to its natural economic partners and relationships, very similar to Representative Goodwin's intent, and it splits McDowell, which is right in the center, has the great I-40 running right through it. It's a natural county to split if you have to split one, and we do. So I recommend this to you. Thank you.
For what purpose, gentleman from McDowell, Representative Dobson Rice?
Debate the amendment. The
gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, I appreciate Representative Queen bringing this to my attention, letting me know that he was going to submit this amendment, and we share some of the same struggles in Western North Carolina with broadband, access to care, and other things, so we both do know this part of the state. I will say that I grew up in Avery County. I went to high school there, and I do have a familiar connection to this part of the state. And I can tell you that Avery fits more with Mitchell and Yancey County than they would with Watauga and Wilkes and Caldwell County. So in my view, that's a better fit. Also, with McDowell County, as a side note, McDowell County is Western North Carolina to me. And that also does not need to be split. This affects all of the 85th district, which I happen to carry. So I would ask you to vote no on this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House, the adoption of Amendment A6, sent forward by Representative Queen. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 42 having voted in the affirmative, 58 in the negative. The amendment fails. Now back on the bill again. I believe Representative Jackson had his Representative, for what purpose, the lady from Wilson, Representative Farmer Butterfield, rise.
Speak on the bill.
Lady has the floor.
Ladies and gentlemen, House Bill 1029, if you look at the map, it shows partisan gerrymandering on the face. Democratic votes are clearly being designated in urban areas. For example, it pairs the core Winston-Salem with Guilford and District 4, which puts Orange, Durham, and part of Wake and the more Democratic VTDs in Chatham into one district. Correspondingly, the 8 Republican districts have been engineered to be very safe. It would also make the current District 1 cover the northeast of the state into a swing district when considering its history as a district where black voters can elect the candidate of their choice. This is disturbing. Similar to the current District 8, the map splits Cumberland County, pairing Democratic voters there with a string of more rural Republican counties all the way to Chatham. Also similar to the current maps, it divides Mecklenburg, containing some of the most Republican VTDs in that county, and pairing them with a string of more rural Republican counties all the way to Robeson. When are we called to redistrict? When we are called to redistrict, we need to bring together regions of the state, not factions of political parties. When our districts are shades of purple instead of red or blue, we get congressional representation that focus on the district lines and not on the party lines. Vote no.
For what purpose, gentleman from Cumberland? Representative Lucas, rise.
To debate the bill.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I peruse the proposed bill, I can't help but note one of the apparent segments of complaint in sponsoring the initiation of the legislation for this bill. Cumberland, where I live, was cited, I believe, or at least I've heard, and I'm very well aware that many complaints in Cumberland were that the county stretched the previous legislation, stretched Cumberland from the middle part of the state all the way almost completely west, at least midwest of the state. That was a common complaint throughout Cumberland County. The new proposed legislation still does the same. Cumberland primarily is known as a somewhat of an urban county, and it's being stretched through rural areas all the way to Cabarrus County. Don't know that that's going to be very advantageous for Cumberland County, so I'd have to say no on this legislation.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question before the House is the passage of House Bill 1029 on its second reading. Those in favor will vote aye, those opposed will vote no, and the clerk will open the vote. Representative Conrad, lady wish to vote? Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 55 having voted in the affirmative, 46 in the negative. House Bill 1029 passed the second reading. Bill without objection. Be read a third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Hardin, Representative Lewis, rise.
Debate the third reading, Mr. Speaker.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is important that we establish a record. I'll go as fast as I can, but there's some things that I think we need to address here. First of all, it's been discussed that this is somehow based or built upon the judge's map or the common cause map. I will encourage you to look up the common cause or the judge's map. You'll find out that this map bears very little resemblance to that. I do find it extremely frustrating, though, that many have, and I listen, I care about what people ask us to do, but many have said we need to have a commission that draws the maps. And I can remember when this commission of retired judges met and released this map, the Common Cause map, and it was brought forward as this is a great day. This is a new way. It's a new way to get things done. This is a fair map. It's the way to go. But when it was proposed in committee, it was shot down and said, this is not what we want to do. This is not what we want to use. And in fact, it's even been criticized on the floor today, even though this map bears virtually no resemblance to what was the judges' maps. What I want all of you as my colleagues to think about and to help me with is something that I hear all the time about fair maps. We just want fair maps. Help me understand exactly what you mean when you say fair maps. What do I mean by that? Many think, well, that means that you put the same what that means to many folks is that we do consider political partisan data and we figure out some way to draw shapes that voted 50% for Trump and 50% for Clinton, and that's a fair seat, and just have at it. I tell you, though, when you start talking about doing that, there are certain folks that push back and say, yeah, that's fair, but let's not do it in the northeastern part of the state because that we wouldn't want to do it there. Or let's not take the seat out of Charlotte or out of Wake County, but let's do it everywhere else. It's an inconsistency that I'm having trouble trying to overcome. But I'm sincere when I say, what does that mean? There are some in this chamber that means, who think it means if we have 13 seats, that I figure some way out as the lead map drawer to draw 6 seats that are guaranteed to elect a D and 6 seats that are guaranteed to elect an R and one that is 50-50. There are some folks that believe that's fair. I don't know exactly what your definition of fair is. Here's what I know. I did not consider partisan data in the drawing of these maps. I do not know what the partisan likelihood of these maps are, but I can tell you, if you're interested, I'm told that before I could even get out of the committee room last night, that many folks on social media had already begun to apply the partisan scores to it. You know why? Because politics permeates what we do up here. I have the utmost respect for every member that I serve with. Everybody in this chamber put themselves up before 80,000 of their fellow residents, and they won the right to be in this room and to share their concerns. But despite what it means a lot to me, the kind words that have been said about the openness of the process and the inclusion of folks, but the bottom line, there were many that were predisposed to vote no before they ever walked in here. It's just extremely frustrating. Please understand what it's like to be the person tasked as one of the leaders of the map drawing process. Representative Queen is one of the few folks, I think, who's actually served more terms here, if you count his time in the Senate, than I have. He offered an amendment that didn't pass, but one of the things that he said was how valuable it was to have two members of Congress representing you. Where the people of Buncombe County have kicked me repeatedly for giving them two members of Congress for the past 9 years. That's the kind of inconsistency I'm talking about and I'm trying to figure out. My friend my mentor, no kidding, my first year here, my mentor was Marvin Lucas from Cumberland County. One of the concerns that I heard from him and from Representative Floyd and Representative Soka, I'm sure Representative Richardson feels the same way, but we also heard it at the public comment, is let's try to keep Cumberland whole. I made the policy choice to split Harnett, my own county, in order to try and do that, because I was told that was what we needed to do to be more fair. Then we hear complaints, well, but it's linked to counties in the western part of the state. It's been linked to counties in the western part of the state for the past 20 years. This isn't a new thing. I bring up these points today, and well, let me make one more point, and then I'll close, I promise. In the 2011 round of redistricting, we did draw what we believe to be a voting rights required district in northeastern North Carolina. That was the first congressional district. When we drew that, we had three expert reports telling us that we needed to do that because there was racially polarized voting in this state. I want to add one little step to the history that Representative Harrison gave you. There was a suit filed. It was the Dixon versus Rucho suit. And it went all the way through our state court, and the state court found that the maps were okay. Then a new suit, with the lead plaintiff being, the first name escapes me, but the last name was Harris, and that went up, and the judges in that case said, you did not have enough compelling evidence before you to use race in drawing districts, therefore you should not have used it. That's what the court found. That's the law of the land. To my knowledge, no one has offered any proof or evidence to contradict what the federal court said. Therefore, race was not a consideration and should not have been a consideration in drawing these maps. I say all this to you today, not to belabor your time, but because these are legitimate conversations that intelligent, caring people can have about an important process. These conversations belong in this chamber. And they belong in our committee rooms. And they belong back in our districts, talking to folks. This is where the founders vested the responsibility to do this job. Because we are the ones. We're the branch of government that's supposed to be closest to the people. I would submit to you that we are here today because we are doing our job as the founders envisioned for us to do it. I would submit to you that all of these issues that I bring up were not criticisms. They are valid ideas, and I'm willing, I've said this before, to try and find a better way to draw districts. There's always a way. Anybody thinks they can't improve is not somebody you want to be your friend, because they're, you know, they don't know that they don't know. I'm willing to try to find an even better way to do it. But what I'm telling you right now is that this is the body tasked with doing this job, and we've done a good job at trying to meet the ever-changing, ever-evolving, and that's not a criticism of the courts, but there has been a changing or reinterpretation or new precedent set with some of these court cases, and we've responded to it. But just like all of us in here have a different opinion, a different responsibility to speak for a different constituency back home, This is the place for that argument to happen. We are the people tasked with making those decisions. That is the way the founders intended it to be. And with your green vote today, that is the way it will continue to be. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose, the lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Cunningham, rise.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to ask Representative Lewis a question, please.
Representative Lewis, gentlemen, yield.
He yields.
Thank you, Representative Lewis. Can you tell me how many competitive districts was created by this particular map that is here for before us today?
No, ma'am, and I'll tell you why. First of all, I don't know what, with all due respect, I don't know what you would mean by competitive. Second of all, I would have had to have relied on some sort of past partisan performance in order to make that gauge. So no, I cannot tell you that.
Thank you. I would like to speak to the bill, Mr. Speaker.
Please recognize debate the bill.
Thank you. New evidence has appeared about the drawing of districts. And part of that evidence is that generally, when you draw districts, the people that live next door have a tendency to vote the same way that you vote. That the general surrounding that live within your district, live within your community and neighborhood, have a tendency to vote within whatever your beliefs are. So it is my hope, and thank you, Representative Lewis, don't thank you for the hard work. My hope is that we will be leading before the next census is done to look at what is new in drawing maps. Because even though you create Forsyth and Greensboro and you know it may be a winnable seat, that doesn't give that particular person represented in that area any additional power. Just because that community is minority or have people of interest in it or community interest in it, it does not necessarily give that particular blocked out district that is basically one particular people that are residing in it any more power. So it is my hope that as we move forward, we do look at some independent commission for redistricting so that we don't have to do it. So that what is available nationally in the advancement of some of the states that have moved forward with independent commission, we can rely on some of that. Because it's going to be a new way of doing things that is available to us. And I think, Representative Lewis, you've done the best you could with what you have. It's not necessarily going to be what we like, but within the next cycle, when it's time for the census to be done, we will see a whole nother set of maps being created. And I hope that we will look to new technology and not just to what we are used to doing and find some different ways to do it in advance. Thank you.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Wake, Representative Jackson, rise?
Speak on the bill.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to ask you to vote against this bill. It's probably not a big surprise to anybody, except I'm going to be honest with everybody on the floor today. This is an 8-5 map. Okay, I haven't looked at any partisan data from these maps. I haven't looked at any of those people that did it on the internet. This is an 8-5 map. There's a doctrine in the law called the fruit of the poisonous tree. Representative Lewis has agreed today that he is the primary map drawer of this map. He knows the racial data of these maps because he's used it before in drawing racially gerrymandered maps. Right? Struck down by the United Supreme Court. He knows the partisan data of these maps because he's used it in drawing these maps before, right? That's what we expect the court's getting ready to do. Because he said he drew a 10-3 map because he couldn't figure out a way to draw an 11-2 map. Right? I mean, that's what he said. That's the comment that got us the case and all that stuff. And so to sit up here and say that he somehow magically forgot all that data and was not considered. Now, if somebody who wasn't here for the last 8 years had drawn these maps and stood up and said, I didn't consider any of that data, I might be able to go along with that. But not Representative Lewis. He knows this stuff. And he knows as well as I do, this is an 8-5 map. And it's an 8-5 map with 8 Republicans and 5 Democrats. In fact, the closest district, which I would, my friend, good friend Gene Farmer Butterfield and I would probably disagree, was in the northeastern part of the state. The changes today made it less competitive. The first two changes with Vance and Warren County moved it less competitive, and then the amendment from Rashford Godwin moved it and made it even less competitive. This is a solid 8-5 map. Representative Lewis asked what I thought would be a fair map. I think what a fair map would be is that where people who were representing us in D.C. didn't take it for granted that they were going back in 2 years. I think D.C. would work so much better if they actually had competitive seats and had to be accountable for their votes. But in this map, they do not. 8 Republicans will be reelected and 5 Democrats. Now, a primary might change which Republican or which Democrat, but in the end, this is an 8-5 map. It is not competitive in any way. It's not fair. We had the opportunity to do this in a bipartisan fashion and try to sit down and do a better job, and we did the same thing we always did. And today, what, we were supposed to be here at 1 o'clock, so the people who have been on the committee the last 2 weeks and doing all that work, things showed up at the last minute and got put in. We could barely even look them up on the dashboard before we were asked to vote on them. This is an 8-5 map. I'm going to ask you to vote against it. Hopefully the court will send it back and we'll do a better job next time.
For what purpose, gentlemen from Scotland, Representative Pierce Rice.
Excuse me, Mr. Speaker. Ask Representative Reed a question.
Representative Reeves, gentlemen yield.
Happy to.
He yields.
Representative Reed, thank you for that consideration. I did not have a chance to serve on the redistricting committee. I'm glad those who did, but you were there every day, and I believe that of all the members in this chamber, you are a fair-minded individual, legislator. When I go back home, I need to explain my vote to my district on why I voted the way I voted. Could you help me understand? I wasn't here. I don't know all that happened. Could you help me if I have to articulate that to my district, why I voted a no vote on the maps, please?
I could go very in-depth. I won't go very in-depth. I would just say that Representative Harrison, I think, did a very good job of breaking down what our issues are. Representative Jackson has done that, Representative Farmer Butterfield, and the short is that, again, if we're here because the courts have told us that what we did before was incorrect, and we repeat the same mistakes on these maps, then it's really hard to then turn around to the court and say that we've tried to do different. And that's not disparaging anybody. That's not saying that anybody didn't do any efforts. I'll be the first to say that I understand what Chairman Lewis is saying in the sense of this is a difficult, difficult job, and you're going to get criticized no matter what. I get that. But in this particular case, I think that some of the criticisms that have been brought up are fair criticisms in the sense of we've got to fix the things that the courts have asked us to fix, and we can't really pick and choose. And that there is a huge difference between what the general public would consider a fair map and what we may put forward in something like this as a fair map. And I think at this point in time, we're just at a point in our history where we've got to do what the general public would ask us is a fair map. And I think that this particular map, if you go home and you talk to people and you talk about the things like Representative Joe Sam Queen talked about communities that have got economic interests, that have worked together all these times, that have done things together, we're going to have a hard time explaining, if you vote yes, why it was okay to change those districts, why it was okay to put them in different areas. And so I think that if you take all of those arguments, that would give you a sufficient answer to be able to comfortably go home to people and explain them how you voted. And again, I am not in any ways tell anybody that this is easy, but I think that goes to what Representative Jackson is saying in the sense of we've got time. And if this gets decoupled from the primary, so be it. But we've got a problem. We should fix it the correct way.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the passage of House Bill 1029 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
In the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it. The ayes do have it. House Bill 1029, having passed third reading, is ordered engrossed and sent to the Senate by a special messenger. For what purpose, the lady from Guilford, Representative Harrison, rise.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to be recorded as a no on Senate Bill 356.
Lady will be recorded as having voted no on Senate Bill 356. We have one final matter on the calendar, and that is the adjournment resolution. House Joint Resolution 1026. The clerk will read.
Representative Lewis. House Joint Resolution 1026, a joint resolution adjourning the session, reconvening pursuant to Section 1 of Resolution 2019-20. The House concurring, Senate concurring.
Gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, is recognized to debate the resolution.
Mr. Speaker, this resolution simply says that when both the chambers jointly adjourn on the date as previously agreed to in the earlier adjournment resolution, that we will stand adjourned until January the 14th of 2020. I'll be happy to answer any questions, but that's all that this does. I would appreciate your support.
For our purpose, gentlemen from Wake, Representative Jackson, rise.
Speak on resolution.
Gentleman has the floor.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm just going to renew my comments from a couple of weeks ago. We're going to go home till January, and I know I'm happy about that. I know many of you are happy about that. But there are a lot of educators in this state who are not happy about us going home to January. That they're not going to get that raise before Christmas. That we're not going to try to work something out, that the parties aren't even talking at this point. So I'm going to ask you to vote against this resolution, because to vote for it would be voting saying you're okay with that.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House, passage of House Joint Resolution 1026 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 58 having voted in the affirmative, 42 in the negative. House Joint Resolution 1026 passes second reading. Bill without objection. Be read a third time.
House resolved and sent concurrent.
Question for the House. Passage of House Joint Resolution 1026 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Opinion of the chair, the ayes have it. The ayes do have it. House Joint Resolution 1026 having passed third reading. Bill is ordered to sent to the Senate. Notices and announcements. For what purpose, the gentleman from Rowan, Representative Warren, rise. Oh, wait, just a moment. But members, if I could have your attention before members leave. Tomorrow we will have session at 4 p.m., but that will be a no-vote session. The chair has been informed that the Senate will be going in at 2 p.m. for their session, so there was really no reason for us to come in before, so we'll be in at 4. So you all are welcome to be here, but there's no need. There will be no recorded votes at that time. For what purpose, the gentleman from Rowan, Representative Warren, rise.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A moment of personal privilege, please.
Gentleman is recognized.
Colleagues, January will mark the beginning of my 10th year up here. And one of the things, there were several things that surprised me when I first came up here, but nothing's impressed me more than our staff. These are people whose institutional knowledge and their knowledge of current events on such a wide range of subjects is absolutely phenomenal, to say the very least. We spend long hours up here on a range of subjects, from puppy mills to hydraulic fracking. We spend long hours on the budgets, long hours on redistricting, and they are right there with us. And long after we've gone home, they're still here. And I think a lot of times that goes unacknowledged. The amount of dedication they have, the amount of their patience with us, they're always polite, always ready to help, and they don't care what party you belong to. My hat goes off to them. We've been here nearly a year now, and they've been here with us. without a complaint. I want to ask you to join me in thanking our staff for their dedication and their hard work.
For what purpose the lady from Wake, Representative Ball, rise?
Inquiry of the chair.
Ladies recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I understand that our bill now goes to the Senate, and they have to approve it without any changes, or else it has to come back to us. Is that not right?
That's correct, and the chair is hopeful that there will be no changes made. Of course, if there are, then we'll cross that bridge when we get there, and we'd have to come back sometime after tomorrow.
Follow-up.
Please recognize.
And you will notify us of that, I assume, as soon as they pass or don't pass the bill tomorrow afternoon. You said 2 o'clock is when they come back tomorrow?
That's when they come back, right. If they haven't actually passed it and it's not complete, then we won't actually adjourn. So.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Any further notices or announcements? If not, the gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn to reconvene Friday, November 15th at 4 o'clock p.m., subject to the standard stipulations set forth in Rule 15.1.
Representative Lewis moves, seconded by Representative Dixon, that the House do now adjourn to reconvene Friday, November 15th at 4 p.m., subject to the standard stipulations set forth in Rule 15.1. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Stand adjourned.
Special message from the Senate. Senate Chamber, November 14th, 2019. Mr. Speaker, it is ordered that a message be sent to the House of Representatives with the information that the Senate adopts the report of the conferees for House Bill 200, Conference Committee Substitute Bill to be entitled an act to provide state match for disaster relief from Hurricane Dorian and other named storms and contingent funding for the Rural Health Care Stabilization Fund. When the appropriate action is taken by both chambers, the bill will be ordered and rolled. Respectfully, Sarah Holland, Principal Clerk of the Senate. House Bill 200, having passed both chambers, is ordered, enrolled, and sent to the governor by special message. Special message from the Senate. Senate Chamber, November 14th, 2019. Mr. Speaker, it is ordered that a message be sent to the House of Representatives with information that the Senate adopts the report of the conferees for Senate Bill 356, Conference Committee Substitute Bill to be entitled an act to make revenue adjustments, implement budget stabilization measures, and enhance transparency and accountability at the Department of Transportation. When the appropriate action is taken by both chambers, the bill will be ordered, enrolled. Respectfully, Sarah Holland, Principal Clerk of the Senate, noted.
Ratification of bills and resolutions. Clerk will read.
The enrolling clerk reports the following bills duly ratified for presentation to the governor. Senate Bill 356, an act to make revenue adjustments, implement budget stabilization measures, and enhance transparency and accountability at the Department of Transportation. House Bill 200, an act to provide funds for disaster relief from Hurricane Dorian and other named storms. Fund for resiliency measures against future storms and funding for Rural Health Care Stabilization Fund to make corrections to various budget-related bills and to enact certain budget provisions from the House Bill 966, 2019 regular session.
Chapter bills will be noted.